Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome, old-time radio fans, to another edition of the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today, we have a program which came kind of late in radio, and it's kind of strange, too. It's supposed to be set in England with the Scotland Yard police, but I can't get by some of the accents on it. But just the same, we're going to listen to it. It's Pursuit, and the Pursuit on Lundy Island from 1950. And in 30 minutes, we'll have the one and only Jimmy Durante with guest Jerry Sullivan from 1945. Now, Pursuit.
Pursuit. Pursuit. A criminal strikes and fades quickly back into the shadows of his dark world. And then the man from Scotland Yard. The relentless, dangerous pursuit. When man hunts man. Now with Ted DeCourcy as starred as the famous Inspector Peter Black of Scotland Yard, we bring you tonight's story of violence and murder. The Pursuit on Lundy Island.
It's slippery, sir. Mind your step.
Thank you, Inspector.
All right, Captain. We're ready to go.
Cast off all lines.
Oh, we may as well go into cabin, sir. Hour and a half run to Lundy.
Right you are.
Lundy, stand by with the boat hook. Keep me clear of the pilings.
Aye, aye, sir.
Bit of luck tonight. Dark, but fog's lifted for the moment.
Yes, Grant.
Sounds clear, sir.
Oh, I say, Flower, you. I'm afraid I'll have to catch some fags from you. I seem to have left mine at the inn. I'd gone to a favorite inn of mine near Clovelly on the northern coast of Devonshire for a weekend holiday. Even a Scotland Yard man must rest. But unfortunately, the criminal doesn't take that into consideration. The body of a woman had been washed ashore on the island of Lundy. Inspector Reginald Flowerdew of the Barnstable Constabulary, knowing that I was in the vicinity, had phoned for assistance and picked me up. We drove to Biddeford and there boarded a motor launch, which was soon churning through the dark waters of Bristol Channel, bound for the island of Lundy. At 10 p.m., approximately 4 hours after the body had been discovered, we sighted the warning light on the high crags overlooking the quiet village.
Of course, it's every man to his choice, but I prefer heavier tackle.
I still say it depends on the fish. My dear fellow, you might as well use a converted billiard cue for a salmon.
Well, sir, you do have a point there.
Can you see something off the starboard there?
I'm not sure,
hello,
sir.
Something up.
I see it. A small vessel. No lights. She's making no headway, sir.
Inspector Flowerdew!
Yes!
Would you and the Chief Inspector come on deck?
Right down.
Hey, bloody odd. Drifting with no lights.
Ahoy the boat! Ahoy there!
Perhaps we'd better have a look, Captain.
Aye. It fools probably asleep below.
Get a line on it, Andy.
All fast, sir.
Hello on board.
They would have heard us, Captain. Let's have a look.
Dandy, get me a torch.
Aye. Yes, madam.
Right. Take the wheel. Keep her stern in.
Aye, sir.
Above decks. Shall we try the cabin? Seems to be stuck.
Well, I'll be blowed. Empty.
No sign of anything. Everything ship-shaped. Send me your torch, Captain, eh?
Here you are.
Thank you. Albatross. Registered in the name of Darrell Sinfield. Homeport, Penzance. Come along. I want to have a better look on deck.
Wonder if the murdered woman on Lundy could have come from this boat.
Possibly, sir. And wait a minute. Yes. Quite possibly. Look here.
Blood, Don't you think?
Yes, quite. And by the wheel. The injured person stood at the controls for some time. How far offshore are we, Captain?
I judge about a mile and a half.
Queer. I suggest we take her in tow. If you'll send one of the crew to take the wheel, I think I should like to stay aboard. Aboard the derelict, I noted the following points. The anchor was in place at the bow. The engine cold, but in working order. The fuel tank was half filled. In the mahogany paneling near the wheel was a deep gouge which might have been caused by a bullet. And on closer scrutiny of the cabin, I discovered more traces of blood there. Bloody footprints. We were met at the landing by a gnarled and rather foul old fisherman whom I learned had elected himself island constable.
About time. Are you the copper from Barnstaple?
Police Inspector Floward, you. This is Chief Detective Inspector Peter Black of Scotland Yard.
I'll be blathered. You mean you brought Scotland Yard all the way from London for one poor scuttered female? My name is William Blee.
How do you do, sir? Yes, quite. The dead woman, where was she found?
Found her myself down to Grouper Cove. I was fishing.
In your telephone message, you mentioned foul play.
Aye, foulish.
Do you know who she is?
Aye.
Well?
She's lying in the shed on some nets. Covered her with a tarp. Come. Correct. There she is.
Oh.
Aye.
I say, oh.
A surfish day. The rocks didn't do her face any good.
You were saying, Mr. Blee, that you knew who she was.
Aye. First, I thought it was the Sinfield woman.
Oh, Sinfield?
But it ain't. Tis her companion, Maggie Pratt.
Sinfield. That would be Mr. Darrell Sinfield?
Aye.
He owns the Albatross?
Aye.
Do you know where he is?
Aye.
Mr. Blee, I'm delighted to have you assist us. But I'd be most grateful if you would be a little more literal and a little less monosyllabic.
That's a blabberish mouthful. All right, he's fishing. He went off in his other boat, the Tern.
Hello. Inspector.
What is it?
Looks like bullet wound in the head. Point of entrance here. Exit here.
Yes. Mr. Blee, is Mrs. Sinfield on the island?
Aye, she is. She's out at the cottage with that keel-flagged Irishman of hers, Kyle.
Has she been notified of the death?
Aye. She got vaporish, and the Irishman's taking care of her.
I'll want you to take me out there.
Aye. Tis a short walk, though mayhap not for a city-ish man.
I'm sure I can manage with your help. Floward, you will want to get the body back to the mainland. I'd like an autopsy as soon as possible and laboratory tests of the bloodstains.
Right you are, sir. I'll take it myself if you want to carry on here.
Good show. Oh, by the way, would you send a message through to the yard for me?
Yes, of course, sir.
I'd like Detective Sergeant Moffitt assigned to the case. Request that he catch the first plane, will you?
Right you are, sir.
And now, Mr. Blee?
Aye.
I am at your service. Whilst he slotted His Majesty's language, William Blee managed to convey some rather interesting facts. Namely, that Mr. and Mrs. Sinfield had separated some 2 months before, and that she had not been on the island since that time, but had arrived by plane during the afternoon with the keel-flagoned Irishman, Kyle. The Sinfield cottage turned out to be something more than a cottage. It rested on a knoll and commanded a view of the sea and a promontory that stretched out before it.
Ah, there she be, Mr. Black, and I'll go no further.
Oh?
I'll have naught to do with that skirtish woman and that blister-bladdering Kyle.
Yes, quite.
I'll wait for you. While you're in there, I'll do some clamming for tomorrow's fishing.
Good evening.
Mr. Cahill?
Yes?
Inspector Black, Scotland Yard.
Oh, yes, about Miss Pratt. Yes, of course. Won't you come in?
Thank you very much.
Come into the library, do. There's a fire there. Pamela, that is, Mrs. Sinfield, is terribly upset. Maggie's been with her 4 or 5 years.
Yes, I understand.
Who is at the door, Hugh? Oh.
This is Inspector Black, my dear. Mrs. Sinfield, Inspector.
How do you do?
Madam.
Is there any news of Jack?
Jack, Mrs. Sinfield?
Oh, yes, didn't you know? Jack Kettle. He's on the Albatross with Maggie.
I think you'd better tell me from the beginning.
Well, now, perhaps you'd rather...
No, you. I'm all right. Oh. Mr. Cahill and I came over to the island this afternoon to talk to my husband. We had planned to cross in the Albatross, but Jack found motor trouble, and so we flew. If we hadn't...
Now, please, Pamela, don't think about what might have been. Jack Kettle is a sailor of sorts, Inspector. He's been taking care of the Albatross. Mrs. Sinfield told him to bring the boat over after repairs, and Maggie was to come with him.
Maggie's always been with me. I can't stand it. I wouldn't want to harm her.
We found the boat, Mrs. Sinfield.
The Albatross?
Yes.
And Jack?
The boat was adrift approximately a mile and a half offshore. It was empty.
Empty?
I'm truly sorry that I have to question you at this time, but it's terribly important to establish these details. Now, at what hour might you have expected them to arrive here?
Well, no, it's difficult to say, Inspector. It would depend upon the extent of the repairs. But they still should have got here before nightfall. We watched for them until it was too foggy to see anymore.
I gather, Mrs. Sinfield, that your husband has not yet returned.
No, I don't know where he can be.
Have you any means of communication with the village?
No, I'm afraid not.
Mr. Cahill, I'd appreciate a notification as soon as Mr. Sinfield does return.
Oh, yes, of course, I'd be happy to. You're staying in the village?
Yes, at the inn, I believe. Well, I think that's all. Good night, Mrs. Sinfield.
Thank you, Inspector.
I'll see you to the door, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Inspector... Did you find absolutely nothing aboard the Albatross?
I'm afraid not.
Incredible. Well, what could have happened?
That is what I intend to find out. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Well, Mr. B, finished your clamming?
Nay. I never clam. I thought to serve a better purpose by peeping through the window at that rancid pair. You learn little, I'll be bound.
Not quite. I noted there must have been a marked resemblance between the dead woman and Mrs. Sinfield.
Aye. I thought you would.
The next morning, Moffat arrived by a special plane. And over a late breakfast of porridge and smoked roll, I brought him up to the mark on the case.
Well, sir, rather messed up your holiday, I'd say.
Well, I've known Inspector Flowerdew for quite some time. I couldn't very well let him down. More roll, Muffet?
No, thank you, sir. I'm quite finished.
Righto. I haven't heard from the Sinfield place. I think we'd better hop out there.
Worried about the husband, sir?
I'm not sure.
Pretty place, sir.
Yes, it is. I imagine fishing is quite good. I'd like to try my hand here, sir.
Mr. Blood!
Oh, dear. William Blee, Muffet. The local something or other. What is it, Mr. Blee?
Scuttering wind. No good for fishing. Yorkish. Well, we've got another one.
Another one, Mr. Blee?
Aye, I was coming to fetch you. He just swished ashore. The body of a man.
Pursuit. With Ted DeCorsia starred as Inspector Peter Black, the pursuit on Lundy Island continues in just a moment.
Gracie Allen has one of the sweetest dispositions in the world. But her sweetness and light get the acid test when a hit-and-run driver smashes up a fender on her beautiful jalopy tomorrow night. Acid test. There's plenty of acid when Gracie finds that husband George is probably the responsible party. So be listening when the Burns and Allen Show comes your way on most of these same CBS stations this Wednesday night.
Slimish rocks.
Do you recognize him, Blee?
Nay.
Then it isn't Mr. Sinfield?
Nay.
Well, let's get him back to the village.
Right, sir.
Oh, ooh, careful, Muffet. Feet rocks.
Yes, sir.
Do you think it's the chap from the Albatross, Jack Kettle?
I'm afraid so, but come along. We'll make sure.
Poor, sodden frame that had once been a man was identified Jack Kettle by papers in his pocket. He'd been shot twice, once through the left shoulder and then in the back. But here, the bullet had not passed through his body. Now we had something concrete with which to proceed. By the time I had arranged for removal of the body to the mainland so that the bullet could be recovered, another development had occurred. Darrell Sinfield had returned from his fishing trip and was waiting for me in the study of his house on the north.
Sit down, Inspector. Sit down. I hope you don't mind my receiving you in here, but since my dear wife is in the house, this is the one room where I may find privacy, my hunting and fishing room.
I envy you, sir. You have a magnificent collection of rods and guns.
Thank you. I take a great deal of pride in them.
Yes, you must. Mr. Sinfield, I presume you've learned of the tragic events of the past few hours.
Yes, my wife told me. Any word of the young sailor?
I'm afraid so. He, too, had been shot. His body was recovered a short time ago.
Lundy has been such a peaceful place.
Mr. Sinfield, We discovered the boat Albatross unmanned and adrift about a mile and a half offshore last night. Did you at any time during your fishing trip sight her?
I'm sorry, I was fishing over 5 mile bank. That's off the southern tip of the island.
Tell me, sir, any luck?
I'm afraid not. It was rotten. Oh, I managed to muck up my boat with a few bloody mackerel, that's all.
Oh, shame. Well, I shall probably be calling on you again, sir. I hope you won't mind.
Oh, no, of course not. Inspector, I hope you'll understand if I don't show you to the door. As long as my wife is in this house with that man, Cahill, I allow myself the indulgence of self-pity and prefer not to face either one of them.
Yes, quite. One more point, sir. Do you keep the cabinet to your gun collection locked?
No, I've never had any reason. I find Lundy folk are quite honest.
Oh, that's a refreshing fact, sir. Good morning.
Goodbye, sir.
Oh, Inspector.
Oh, there you are, Mrs. Sinfield. I was about to look for you.
You and I just heard about poor Jack. Won't you come into the library, please?
Of course.
Oh, good morning, Inspector. This is shocking news. Have you progressed at all?
This is a very odd affair. As a matter of fact, you can help me. I'm trying to establish a time element. Since you didn't know when the Albatross left the mainland after her repairs, could you give me the name of the dockmaster?
No, Hugh, it's no use. Inspector, the Albatross wasn't in need of repair. We lied to you.
Oh?
Didn't seem important at the time. I still have my pride, and I didn't want anyone to know that I'd come to beg my husband to give me my freedom. When I told him yesterday that you and I were coming over on the Albatross to settle things once and for all, he said he'd be gone by the time we got here. He didn't want to see us. That's why we took the plane. We thought we could catch him unaware.
Maggie and Jack Kettle were to pick us up in the Albatross later.
Mrs. Sinfield, is your husband in the habit of carrying a rifle aboard his boat?
Why do you ask?
When I talked to him, I noticed that one was missing from his gun cabin.
I really couldn't be sure. I know he practices a great deal. He's a wonderful marksman. Good heavens, you don't suspect.
My dear Mrs. Sinfield, at this moment, I have no alternative but to suspect everyone. Moffitt and I wanted to look at Sinfield's fishing boat, the Turn. We found her moored at his private landing at the inlet. We went aboard and made our discovery in the cabin. Well, Moffitt, here it is.
A 303, sir.
Yes. One shell in the chamber and an empty clip. Capacity 5.
That means he fired 4, sir. And recently, from the smell of it.
It doesn't make sense, Moffitt. An innocent man might leave a rifle like this, but would a murderer?
He might, sir. He did have a motive. A jealous husband planning to do away with his wife and her lover. We know he expected them on the Albatross. He could have waited on his boat.
Good show, Moffitt. An expert marksman, say 150 yards, close enough for accuracy, but distant enough to bring about a mistake in identity.
You did mention a resemblance between the maid and Mrs. Sinfield.
Right you are. He shoots her first, she topples overboard. He never sees her again.
Uh-huh.
Then Kettle, first through the shoulder, then in the back. He reaches the wheel and tries to swing out of range. Splendid reconstruction, if I do say so myself. There's only one thing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. What's that, sir?
Mr. Cahill and Mrs. Sinfield, we have only their word that they didn't see the Albatross come into this inlet. Perhaps they did see it. They could have waited high on that cliff, armed with one of the husband's rifles.
But why, sir, if they...
My dear chap, so that we would do exactly what we have done. Build a most excellent case against Mr. Sinfield. The arrest of an unwanted husband would be a novel way of getting rid of him.
Even to the extent of spending the lives of two innocent people?
If such was their plan, yes. I left Moffitt to further search Mr. Sinfield's fishing boat. A heavy afternoon mist had started to drift across the island, and I walked out on the high promontory that stretched like an accusing finger from the house on the knoll. There, at the edge of the cliff, I searched for traces of a hidden rifleman.
Tis a clammish day, Mr. Black.
Mr. Blee?
But no clams to be found. The tide is too high.
I wasn't looking for clams, Mr. Blee.
Oh? Then you're looking for ways and means.
Yes, Mr. Blee. I owe you an apology. I underestimated you. Are you looking for clams, or are you looking for shells?
That is a riddlish question, friend Black. It calls for a riddlish answer. The one is the boat, and the boat is the one. but the weather is drivelling again.
Tell me, is it usually like this at this hour?
Aye. You could set your watch by it this time of year.
In other words, the fog comes over the island and moves out across the channel toward the mainland.
Aye.
Could it be foggy here in the inlet, but a mile or so offshore remain clear as it was last night when I arrived?
Aye. That's what it does every day. And 'tis a sad truth, for it'll bring deadness to a man.
Yes, Mr. Blee. I think it will. The strange old fisherman accompanied me back to the cottage on the knoll and left me at the front door. Inspector Flowerdew had returned from the mainland with complete autopsy, ballistics, and laboratory reports. Moffat had gathered the suspects together in the library.
You have forced me into a very unpleasant situation, Inspector. To be in the presence of this man, and this woman whom I no longer consider my wife.
You think it's any more pleasant for us?
Please, please, darling.
I'm sorry for you all. But murder is an unpleasant business and needs to be disposed of as quickly as possible.
If you're prepared to do that, why are Pamela and I forced to witness it?
For very good reason, Mr. Cahill. We have proof of innocence, which in this case establishes proof of guilt.
You're being devious. Come to the point.
Very well, Mr. Sinfield, I shall. Your wife and Mr. Cahill came here and awaited the arrival of the Albatross. Mr. Cahill, do you consider yourself accurate with a rifle?
Of course he is. He's a fine shot.
Mr. Cahill, could you hit a man at 300 yards?
Now, look here. I don't know what you're trying to do, but
You see, Mr. Sinfield, they did have opportunity, but they also had fog. Fog that made it impossible to see even 30 feet.
Are you suggesting that their supposed innocence makes me guilty?
Exactly, sir. We found a rifle on your boat. It had been fired.
Of course it had. I shot a basking shark while I was fishing. I often do. The great ugly brute shy the fish away.
That would be most difficult to prove. I suppose you will also deny that you were aboard the Albatross after you shot both of its passengers.
I shall.
Quite so. How do you account for the blood stains we found on your fishing boat?
Quite easily. Have you never caught mackerel, sir? They bleed like pigs.
Exactly. And we found traces of that mackerel blood aboard the Albatross.
Tommyrot, it proves nothing.
Very well. According to the autopsy report, your shots were not alone responsible for Kettle's death. He jumped from the Albatross and drowned. Why would he do that?
How should I know?
He jumped from the boat because you were pursuing him. When you failed to find him on deck, you went into the cabin, leaving further traces on the floor.
I repeat, you have no proof. It's all guesswork. You're trying to bluff.
This bullet, sir, is scarcely bluff. It was recovered from the man's body and has been traced to your rifle. Well, Mr. Sinfield, I think that's all.
Yes. Yes, that's all. This time I'll do the job properly.
Sinfield's clutching fingers never reached his wife's throat, but they spoke his guilt much more eloquently than all of the evidence amassed against him. Pursuit. And the pursuit is ended.
Pursuit is produced by Elliot Lewis. The script is written by Anthony Ellis and Gil Dowd, who directed tonight's show. Music was composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Featured in the cast were Raymond Lawrence, Joseph Kearns, Dan O'Herlihy, Bill Johnstone, John Daner, Peggy Weber, and Ramsey Hill. Pursuit. Next week, Pursuit will bring you another dramatic story of the man from Scotland Yard, relentlessly hunting down those whose disordered passions breed violence and murder. With Ted DeCorsia starring as Inspector Peter Black, next week we will present another story of man hunting man when we bring you Pursuit. This week, the Boy Scouts of America are celebrating their 40th anniversary. During those four decades, nearly 20% of the country's male population has been identified with the scouting movement, whose aims are to develop physical fitness, build strong character, and train for good citizenship.
This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are every Wednesday night. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
There was a shoe worn by the ancient Egyptians with the outline of an enemy on its sole, so that the wearer could stamp on his enemy with each step he took. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the story of a very remarkable man. Billy Marshall, a tinker of Kirkcudbright, Scotland, was truly a most remarkable man. In his earlier years, he enlisted in the Army and the Navy 10 times. Each time he enlisted, he deserted without ever being caught. He outlived 17 wives, and he became the father of 4 children after he was 100 years of age. He finally died in the year 1792 at the age of 120 years, believe it or not.
Barry Moore speaking.
Hello, Junior, this is Jimmy.
Jimmy Durante, where are you?
Working at my uncle's restaurant. What a day I had. Someone ordered a Denver sandwich, so I went to Denver. Then someone ordered a Bermuda onion, so I went to Bermuda. And now, Junior, am I burnt up?
Why?
Some guy just came in and ordered devil's food cake.
Yes, Jimmy Durante, Gary Moore, Jerry Sullivan, Roy Bargy and his orchestra, and yours truly, Howard Petrie. Roy Bargy in the orchestra now, in a Roy Bargy arrangement of El Relicario. The co-star of our show. Here he is, Gary Moore.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Howard Petrie, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Friends, before we do anything tonight, the old gentleman who lives next door to my house has asked if he may be allowed to give a message to all of the mothers in our neighborhood. Well, Mr. Orwig, what is your message to the mothers?
Mothers? Keep your brats off my front lawn!
Isn't that touching? And if you'll bear with us, friends, if you'll bear with us, there's just one more message to one mother in particular.
Come back. Come back. No, please come back.
Who are you calling for?
My other wife. I'm John.
time.
Oh, there you are, you marvelous little madcap.
Well, will you look who's here? Forever adenoids. Mrs. Wurtenberg Live, I feel that I must apologize for not coming over to your garden party yesterday.
Oh, I was so disappointed when you didn't show up. You've no idea how I missed you.
And I missed you too, Mrs. Wurtelbertel.
Oh, Mr. Moore, did you really miss me?
Yes, my aim was good, but the rock was too heavy. But tell me, what brings you here tonight?
Well,
Except for those remarkably large feet. What brings you here, huh?
I met your wife on the street, and she asked me to deliver a kiss to you.
My wife asked you to deliver a kiss to me?
Yes.
Well, just put it on the floor right over there.
Mr. Moore, you're just pulling my leg.
Well, I wasn't, but if you think it'll be fun, let's try it, shall we?
Well, that's no way to talk to a lady and a mother.
Why, Myrtle Wurtelbertel. Did I hear you correctly? Are you a mother?
Why, certainly. I have 16 children.
Woo.
Oh, and what a delightful gift my husband Wilberbud got for me. He gave me a bouquet of 16 roses, one for each child, with a lovely mother
card attached.
What did the card say?
Stop!
Let's turn to a boy every mother loves, the one and only Jimmy Durante, in person.
You've got to start off each day with a song.
Say it, boy!
Now, even when things go wrong,
yoo-hoo!
Why, you feel better, you even look better. Chloe! Chloe!
I guess the ushers wouldn't let her in without a ticket. You know, Junior,
huh?
I still can't get rid of that frog in my throat.
The frog? Well, then why don't you have your throat painted?
I would, but the frog and I can't agree on the color. But that is neither umbri nor argo. The other evening, I was at home with a copy of Forever Amber. You see, I don't have central heating. When who should fly into the room but my long-lost carrier pigeon, Herman.
Oh, so your pigeon finally came back. Well, how was Herman?
Delicious. But I want to tell you, Gary, there was a message tied to his leg from the coordinator. He wanted me to construct a pipeline from California to New York. So in order to learn how to dig an underground tunnel, I decided to watch the greatest expert in the world.
Umbriago?
No, a gopher. You only missed by 2 teeth. I worked hard and hand in hand with this gopher. He dug 6 feet and I dug 6 feet. He scooped up dirt and I scooped up dirt. For 10 hours we dug and scooped. And it proved very interesting.
Very interesting?
Yes, we came up on the lady's side of a Turkish bath. Fortunately, we both had towels.
Jimmy, it seems to me that constructing an oil pipeline nowadays is quite a problem. Did you have much trouble getting help?
No, it was child's play for my adulterated mind. I went right out and hired 6,452.
6,452 what?
In these times, who asks?
Well, Jimmy, I assume you already had rights to the land on which you were going to lay the pipeline.
Indubitably, emphatically, consummately, and irrevocably. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Then answer mine. What did I say? Durant, it is one of you in every crowd.
Jimmy, there's one thing that perplexes me. How did you manage to get your pipeline across the Mississippi River?
It was simple, but damp. However, we struck a wrecked ship at the bottom of the river. So we built our pipeline right through the hull.
The hull, you say?
Watch your language, Junior. I've got my sweetheart tattooed on my chest. Anyway, 6 months later, my transcontinental pipeline was finished. We turned the oil on in Los Angeles, and a terrible thing happened,
yeah.
Junior. The pipe sprung a leak in Virginia, and 3,000 acres of tobacco was flooded with oil.
Well, did the oil do any damage?
I don't know. Does your cigarette taste different lately?
You and your problems, Jimmy. You know, you wouldn't get into so much trouble if you just settled down and get married. Gee whiz, Jimmy. Just picture a little white cottage in the country, and a while later, the pitter-patter of tiny feet around the house. How does that sound, Jimmy?
Lovely. You buy the ring and I'll pick out the furniture. But, Junior, no kidding. There's only one thing that keeps me from getting married.
What's that?
I can't find a girl that's my type.
Jimmy, your search is over because I have found a girl who's exactly your type. She's waiting outside now. Agnes!
Drop everything. Roll out the carpets and let me hear those trumpets. Agnes is here in person.
I don't believe it. Nobody could talk like that.
Jimmy, this is the girl I've been telling you about. This is Agnes.
How do you do?
How do you do?
There must be an echo in this joint.
That's my boy who said that. Jimmy, I'm so nuts about you. I've even written you a love song. It's called Tony's Pushcart.
Tony's Pushcart? How does it go?
It don't go. You gotta push it. A million of them.
Junior, I gotta get rid of this dame. She's taking the bread right out of my schnoz.
Jimmy, we have so much in common, we ought to get married. We talk alike.
Yes.
We like the same thing.
Yes.
You're a man.
Yes.
And I'm a woman.
I knew this conversation would end in an argument.
This is the final humiliation. I'll take this to the highest court. Where's my big brother? Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
This wise guy's been insulting me. He's been making fun of my birth.
Yeah? How mortifying. How mortifying. I'll hit him on the head so hard, the bum will be curved like a banana. How do you like that? Why, they're crawling out of the cracks.
I'm surrounded by aliases. Hey, Gary, get me out of this, well? Don't just stand there. Say something.
I can't.
Why not?
That's the conditions that prevail.
Everybody wants to get into the act. Now you know that you can't go wrong. Why, you got all the same for the song.
Roy Bargy and the orchestra now in a Roy Bargy arrangement of Lither.
Playing, I enjoyed a dance backstage with Mrs. Whittlebushel.
Oh, poker?
No, I'm a gentleman at all times.
But, Junior, how about telling the people what's in the culture corner for tonight, please?
All right, James, I'll tell you, though, I'm in a kind of an embarrassing position tonight. You see, my wife has always wanted to write for the radio. Now, let her write me a play for tonight.
Oh, it's swell, Gary. Is the play any good?
Is it good? It stinks. It's not very good at all, no. Not very good.
Well, now, Gary, you're not going to do it just because she wrote it. After all, where is your courage? Where is your independence?
He hasn't been married very long, has he? Now, the play is set in a hospital, and I am a prospective father. As the curtain rises, I am in the hospital elevator. And as I go up to await the birth of my offspring, I am anxiously counting the floors as they go past. 3, 6, 9, 12. I guess it's dangerous to have any more in California on account of earthquakes. Well, I guess this is it. Yes?
Your wife evidently wants your time to be well occupied.
Huh?
If you'll open that door, you'll see what she just got for you. A set of fiddly wings.
Well, nurse, take a good look at me. What do you think I'll be father of this time?
Oh, it's a pity we can't look into the future and see what we're getting, isn't it?
Yeah. See, a fella gets sentimental, you know, at a time like this. I'll never forget the first day I met my wife.
That's no concern of mine. I understand this is your second child. Where was your first baby born?
Well, we'll discuss that later. I brought my wife a bunch of flowers. What shall I do with them?
Well, we usually put them in the icebox overnight.
Uh-huh.
The little ones we never bother with. In fact, if an intern has a date, he usually helps himself to one and wears it in his buttonhole.
Well, I'm not very familiar with this hospital. Where do they take the babies after they're born?
Now, don't worry about a thing. Just sit here with this gentleman. He's waiting, too.
Oh, hello. Say, there's a nice view out this window. That bird's nest on the window ledges is empty, isn't it?
No, that's where you're wrong. I just saw a robin sit down and lay an egg in it.
Oh, gee, I'm so excited. I've lost my hat. I must have left it downstairs in the office.
Well, the superintendent won't let you have it unless it's got your initials on the inside.
Yeah, I'm still worried about my wife. I hope she gives me a little baby boy to take home.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my wife, Lay.
Now, Gary, listen, I'm very fond of your wife, but to me this whole play sounded like it was backwards or something.
Backwards? Howard, that's just it. She was making an upside-down cake while she was writing this play. Now, let's say she wrote the whole thing back.
Well, then let's try reading it backwards, huh?
All right, you start with your last line and read toward the front, and we'll see what happens.
All right?
All right.
Gee, I'm worried about my wife. I hope she gives me a little baby boy to take home.
Well, the superintendent won't let you have it unless it's got your initials on the inside. Now, this play is beginning to make sense. Carry on, Howard. Read on.
Oh, gee, I'm so excited. I've lost my hat. I must have left it downstairs in the office.
That's where you're wrong. I just saw Robin sit down and lay an egg in it. Say, nurse, I'm not very familiar with this hospital. Where do they take the babies after they're born?
Well, we usually put them in the icebox overnight. The little ones we never bother with. In fact, if an intern has a date, he helps himself to one and wears it in his buttonhole.
I've brought my wife a bunch of flowers. What shall I do with them?
That's no concern of mine.
Oh, gee, I'll never forget the day I first met my wife.
It's a pity we can't look into the future and see what we're getting.
Well, nurse, take a good look at me. What do you think I'll be the father of this time?
A set of tiddlywinks. Now, Mr. Moore, your wife evidently wants your time to be well occupied. If you'll open that door, you'll see what she just got for you.
3, 6, 9, 12. I guess it's dangerous to have any more in California on account of the earthquake. Ladies and gentlemen, she paid us a visit once or twice before, but this marks her first night as a regular member of our gang. We're delighted indeed to throw out the welcome mat for Miss Jerry Sullivan.
Thanks, Gary. And I want you to know that I couldn't be more thrilled.
We're thrilled too, Miss Sullivan. You know, you're the prettiest person in Hollywood, the prettiest person in America, and the prettiest person in the world.
Oh, wait a minute, Jimmy. Aren't you forgetting yourself?
No. You're prettier than I am, too.
Well, I think you're both pretty. But for something pretty swell for all of us, Jerry Sullivan singing her song for tonight. Titled, Anywhere, Jerry Sullivan.
Anywhere, as long
change. I'll go where you are, dear. It doesn't matter how far, dear. I'd take a trip to a star, dear, for that warm embrace. Just say and I'll go anywhere, anytime, and any place. Although I have no magic carpet, I'm willing to swear that truth of yours could take me anywhere, anytime, and any place. Although I have no magic carpet, I'm willing to swear kiss of yours can take me anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, in place of our regular Friday night drama, tonight we present another operatic performance by the G-Clef Coffee Klatch and Culture Choir.
That's what I like to hear. How are we going to sing this opera? A cappello?
A cappella? Jimmy, you don't even know what a cappella means.
I know, but you must admit it makes a very intelligent question.
It does. Now, our leading lady tonight, our charming newcomer, Miss Jerry Sullivan, will play the part of my wife. And you, Jimmy, play the part of a crooked sheriff.
Oh, boy, give me my badge. I can hardly wait to pin my badge on.
What's your hurry?
I gotta hurry. My suspenders just broke.
I see. Well, now, the part of a handsome stranger in the opera will be played by Robert Jellison, a fugitive from the Danny Kaye Show.
How do you do?
Are you in pain? And for our final bit of casting, Mr. Howard Petrie will be in charge of singing the special choral effect.
Oh, the choral effect? Oh, I love that kind of carrying on.
I'll debate the five that guy's father hates him.
Well, enough of this twiddle twaddle. The opera is about to begin.
Mr. Bargy, the overture to the opera. Tonight's opera deals with a tragic theme indeed. A young man who has fallen into the clutches of a crooked sheriff who's in love with a young man's wife. The sheriff has framed our hero, and from the young man's heart there springs forth a song of deep despair.
Oh, I'm a-going to the jailhouse, alas and alack. I'm an innocent man, but I am one sad sack. I've been framed by a sheriff named Sneaky McGurk, and it ain't no work to say McGurk is a jerk. He's as crooked as a pretzel and as slippery as an eel. He surpasses old Sullivan as the number one heel. He held up a bank and then dug gunnet. He swore out a warrant and he claimed that I'd done it.
Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub!
Now I am the wife of this unfortunate man. He's got an honest heart underneath his homely tan, but McGurk is a jerk who is crazy about skirts.
And when it comes to her, he ain't crazy, he's nerd.
So he framed my hubby, gonna have him sent to prison, cause he thinks that from then on, I will be his'n. But I'll expose the sheriff and I'll make him face the music. Or my name ain't Fanny Aphrodite Van Dupin.
Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub! And here he comes, folks, the crooked sheriff who has framed our hero so he can steal his wife. Let's all hit!
Hutchy-tutchy, my pretty little squaw. Open up the door in the name of the law.
stick up your hands and don't you dare move a muscle, or I'll perforate your husband right in the bustle.
Will not.
Will too.
Will not.
Will too. When I've got him in the jailhouse out of the way, we can play post office all the doggone day. I'll give you air mail kisses. I'll give you nothing less.
But you'll have to send your schnozzle by Railway Express.
Hot dog! Hot dog! Hot dog! Hot dog!
I'll bet he wrote the words to that himself.
You're a mean man, Sheriff, and you ought to be in jail. You're lower than the dimple on the tummy of a whale. But I'll hug you and I'll kiss you if you'll only do right.
Hug me and kiss me, there's good news tonight.
Say yes.
Oh, no.
Say
oh,
yes.
Oh, no. You can stop your begging, because it ain't no use. I'm taking him away to the local calaboose.
Won't somebody save me from this trick so dirty?
I'll call Dick Tracy.
He's out with Gravel Gertie.
Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub! Hot tub!
Mr. Petrie, you have added nothing to the conversation.
What's that to come in?
Who do I spy?
What's that a flying up there in the sky?
Is it a bird?
Is it a plane?
Is it going to land?
Stand back, villain. It's me, Superman.
Egad.
Hoorah.
Gazoot.
Hooray. You heard what I said. It's me, Superman. And believe me, kiddies, I'm a super duper man. I can fight like crazy. I'm a real brave fellow.
He's got a physique like a cup full of Jell-O. That's two. Have two.
Hot dog! Hot dog! Hot dog!
Why don't you go someplace and lie down?
Did you bring any evidence to set me free?
The sheriff is the guilty man, as guilty as can be. He made a bad slip, and to jail he's a-going.
How do you like that? My slip is showing.
Three cheers.
I'm some.
Three cheers.
I'm cooked.
So you see, Mr. Sheriff, the crime doesn't pay.
And from other men's women, you should always keep away.
Have you any last words, you wicked old goat?
Yeah. I'm spooked.
Gary and Jimmy will be back in a moment.
Someone as lovely as you, but I Another finality, Mr. Durant.
Another conclusion, Mr. Bull.
And now that our day's work has been done, James, I've got an idea. You know, Danny Kaye's program follows ours in a few minutes. Why don't we go next door and hear him sing his song?
Junior, I don't want to sound snooty, but why should I listen to Danny Kaye? You know, Danny and I are almost exactly alike.
You are?
Yes, he has a wavy head and pear-shaped tones, and I have wavy tones and a pear-shaped head.
That's you all right. Good night, Mr. Durant.
Good night, Mr. Moore.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Show.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.